Hosting for this podcast is made possible through mtgcast.com, which is supported by a generous contribution from quietspeculation.com, Magic's premier trading and financial news site.
All right. All right. Hello and welcome to At Your Insta. This is a brand new podcast for the Magic the Gathering, and I'm here with a couple of my friends. We have Jordan Kennedy and Mike Kenny. I myself am Morgan McCarl, and we are just starting this out, and we're trying to get a podcast that has a competitive edge to it, but definitely is of a open nature as far as that goes. So we're going to go ahead and jump into introductions. I'll actually get started off. My name is Morgan, and I have been playing the game on and off again for, you know, basically since I was in fifth grade. Came back to the game around the time that M12 was released and did the pre-release. Started doing being more competitive, going to FNM, probably in April of 2012, and kind of been doing that ever since. Started going to bigger tournaments, starting to try to do money, and kind of been doing that and just having a good time. And I'll let Jordan take over for right now.
Sweet. Yeah, my name is Jordan, as he said, and I've been playing Magic for actually just a year. I'm a baby. I'm a little virgin baby Magic player. And
a little virgin baby. Anyway.
That's the best kind of baby. I've been playing Magic for a year. Yeah, I started right before the M13 pre-release. So the first set of Magic I ever experienced at a pre-release was horrible. And when I first started listening to Magic podcasts, they actually talked about this 5-mana 5/3 green creature that gains you 5 life. That was the way they originally described Thragtusk during pre-release podcasts. So I thought that was a really cool beginning history of my thing. Started getting competitive pretty much just a couple months after I started playing. Got that bug of just wanting to win and not lose. And Morgan, you left out a question in the show notes. There is a fuck, marry, kill Tom Martell, Brian Keller, LSV.
Are we really doing the Kibler, Martell, LSV, fuck, marry,
yes.
kill? Are we doing this?
That's how all you right. get to know people.
All right, well, okay. Well, first of all, obviously, we're going to fuck Brian Kibler.
Yes.
Hands down. Just man's pretty sight to see. I think that I would have to marry LSV just because I could live with his puns all day. And we're going to kill Tom Martell. Just because, I don't know.
He has a spirit token already, so he's prepared.
That's true. He's already ready to written and ringer to come back. He really likes spirits. He probably wants to die in some twisted fashion, so I'm fine with that.
I'm sure he has flashback.
I'm pretty sure. just for two more of them, though.
Yeah, I totally have sex with Brian Kibler.
I let him touch me.
In bad places, and some good ones. I killed Tom Martell, sorry. If it came between Mary and LSV and Tom Martell, like, I just want the guy who's got more success in Magic in my house.
Ooh, zing! Tom Martell, you're so far away from being inducted into the Hall of Fame. I just feel like I could have you in this house.
What's a couple Pro Tours? Anyway. Go ahead, Mike.
All right, well, my name's Mike. I've been playing since Tempest, but when I first started playing, we really didn't know the rules, kind of met up as we went. Quit after high school, and then came back when I was living all by my lonesome. Well, I started, my job down here in Columbus, and then started getting competitive. And I've had a fair amount of success, top 8 at a couple things, made some money off Star City. So as far as that goes, we're just trying to get a little better. I guess onto this weird question. I've actually met Tom Martell, and that guy is actually pretty nice. So I guess I would marry him. He just seemed very, very pleasant.
Does he have a gentle hand?
He did have a gentle hand. It was a very soft
He's
hand.
He's probably a good cook. He's probably a good cook.
Kibler would be the one I just have to kill. Like,
what?
He's a good. You can't base it off the way he looks, man. I mean, he's got that arrogance to him.
Yes, you can.
10 minutes in the same room, you're probably just like looking for the sharp objects. Like, man. And so I guess that leaves sex with LSV. I don't know. All the puns would just be insane.
That's true. I'm sure it'd be a very enchanting evening, to say the least. All right. So that's pretty much where we are at and what we are. Obviously, we may not have the most experience as anyone else you might listen to, but we sure as hell have a lot more fun. So, you know, basically what we're going to do with this intro is kind of go through a few things, kind of a high level of what we're going to be talking about today. One of our first subjects is going to be Modern Masters and kind of diving into that. Obviously, it's huge for the scene. Next, we're going to go ahead and jump to some standard action and look at the SCG Baltimore results. And did they have plants? What happened? Why did two people that are under their payroll win? That just seems not fair. Next, we're actually going to look at some local events here. We are based in the Midwest area, on and around Ohio. And we are kind of looking at some events that are coming up in the Midwest area. One being a PTQ in PA and the other one being one of our local game stores, having an anniversary with Modern Masters, being a potential draft format. So, we'll go ahead and we'll kind of dive into Modern Masters. Now, I don't have the spoiler pulled up here, but I don't think you even need the spoiler pulled up to know that there's definitely value in this set.
It's insane.
It is pretty insane as far as that's concerned. But you know what do we feel? What would you guys think is something that you are surprised to see and surprised to not see? And we'll go with, like, rare, mythic rare, commons and uncommons. We obviously know this is a draftable format. Those are in there probably to support the draft and not necessarily for modern itself. But if there is something that shines in commons and uncommons, you can even bring that up as well. Any guys have any surprises, some things seen, not seen?
I was a little surprised that Mutavault wasn't printed. Like, oh, yeah. Thought Seize didn't surprise me because they can print that essentially anywhere. It's just a discard spell. But Mutavault definitely is going to be something that's hard to flavor-wise fit. Like, hey, this is every creature type. So it seemed like Modern Masters was the best place it could possibly see print. So I don't know what they're going to do with it.
Yeah, that I would have to agree that is a little bit difficult. I mean, obviously it doesn't say changing on it, so that is to its benefit. But it is definitely something that feels like it needs to be heavily tribally influenced.
I just realized, because I'm the baby virgin Magic player, I'm having to look up literally every card that you guys are going to talk about, like Mutavault. I was like, what's a Mutavault?
better
Google it.
And that seems like a really awkward card. We all start not knowing anything, and then some of us just absorb it all in a short amount of time.
And others will never get it, and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're that's all right, too. We still love you.
Oh, Noble Hierarch. I'll contribute.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Noble Hierarch. I would agree with you as well. That
I
is
stole
a very...
that from Reddit.
Oh, not even original.
That's another one I have no idea where... I don't know where they'll print it, because they just did the Exalted core set, and it wasn't printed there. So I have no idea where that card in your
print. Yeah, insane, though.
It's only going to get more and more expensive at this point in time, because, you know, it's played in prominent decks that do need that mana acceleration, and just like Mike said, it's not something that could easily fit into a core set, and it's not something that could easily fit even to an expert level set, because you need both Exalted and need it to be, you know, a Bant shard, basically.
Right, I mean, core set's always going to make more sense when they got Birds of Paradise than will ever make sense.
Oh, exactly.
The hierarchy, yeah. So.
Right.
Getting off track, but with M14, they did show that they finally fixed Llanowar Elves
Elvish Mystic, right?
Yeah, Elvish Mystic. Yeah, it's just Llanowar Elves, but just one and not multiple, which is something that they have been wanting to fix for a long time.
That also has to deal with the fact that Llanowar being a specific place, they won't want to stop mentioning those things sometimes. You're like, oh, where's Llanowar? Ah, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most certainly. Just don't question.
Yeah.
But obviously, Riley Curran, I'm sure, is very excited about it.
Oh yeah. Elves galore.
We could stop playing those Fintorn elves. Who wants those guys anyway?
Play them all. You obviously play every one mana elf you can.
Everything, yeah, clearly. Mike kind of already brought this up, but Thoughtseize, I mean, obviously, it can be printed in another set, but I was really, I'm kind of happy sad, because, like, I want it. It's the only card I really need for my modern deck that's really expensive that I don't really want to pay $60 for. Not saying that it being printed in Modern Masters would even drop that down, but it might be something that I can have easier access to at the very least. But you know, it can be obviously be easier, more easily printed in other sets, other expert level sets, or even core sets. I wouldn't see it in a being in a core set because it is a downside, and they don't usually like using downsides.
I don't have to give new players the like, why would I pay 2 life for this?
Why would I do that? That's a good thing. Trust me, you would pay 5 life for it, maybe.
You have 20 life. It's okay.
It could be in consideration. You would be like, well, all right, maybe.
See, I think the flip side to that though is that there also has to be something that bridges that gap before you get to the expert level. So I don't think I mind that. I also think it doesn't technically. I think have to be a rare anymore either, but I guess that's debatable.
Yeah, that definitely is debatable. I mean, what a lot of people were saying, like, oh, well, it's not at rare. Maybe it's just at uncommon. It's like, they would get such a backlash for that. I really feel that the people that do make money off of this in a secondary market would catch backlash. Whether they
at some point, Wizards has to just say, you know, we want people to be able to play the card.
Oh,
obviously, it could stay worth money. You know what I mean? They've shown that they're like Tarnovoy. You know how many of those are actually going to be opened in Modern Masters? They're fine with it being expensive, but at some point you got to put the card in the hand. Like for example, Jordan, who had never even seen the set before. I mean, how is he going to play Modern if he's never even seen the card and he's looking at the price going, "Whoa, $70 for a card I've never even heard of before"? No, thank you.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. That's the biggest barrier for me. Like Standard play is hard enough to keep up with after 1 year of collection. Let alone going. Like I wanted to play. Red Green Tron, right? And I was like, oh, the lands, Grove of the Burn Willows, up $20. Nope. Like that's 2 shock lands, you know what I mean? And that's another card that's not reprinted, that by the way.
Oh, but that did get reprinted. That was in the from the Vault Lands.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay, that's why it wasn't reprinted this year.
Okay. Right. Yeah, and that's another one of those like weird land cycles that where they fix it like they did with Graven Cairns, or is it something they're just gonna be like, well, we might do this, we might not. The one thing that I think is definitely, missing is, having the Vivid Lands as like sort of the color fixers is kind of meh. Like, I don't know, like there could be better lands that could be put in there, but it just seems kind of a letdown. I understand you need them, but they just seem kind of bland.
They could have done. They could have done any number of lands, or even like Hideaway lands would have been cool.
That would have been. Yeah,
they needed something, I guess. There's not a lot of gold in there, so the banner fixing gets to be basic. Mm-hmm. So I'm not upset about it, but I mean, it could have been worse. So
it could have been worse.
No, we talked about prices for like as a barrier to entry, and that's one of the reasons that they're printing this set, right? Is so that like people can get into Modern because they're obviously pushing it, but. With it being such a such a limited print run, is it actually going to lower the dollar value of cards in Modern?
I will mention, and again, this is Chase Andres, who does some of the writing for Star City. He talked about this, since suggested that the rares and the mythics weren't actually going to go down too much in price. But you do have a ton. He did his basis based on the From the Vault series, which a lot more of this is going to be open than that, just with the number of players at the Grand Prix alone. Mm-hmm. I think some of the mid-level, so like a Revelark, for example, that card becomes very, very cheap.
Yeah, because it's not necessarily in high demand, but it's needed in niche cases, and it's usually only a one of. Most decks, I think.
Say it $100, though. I mean, that's just going
to
happen.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's no way around it. It's so universal. Like, they would have to print it at rare for it to really see get hit. I mean, it being at mythic rare, it's not gonna see much. There are some exciting cards that I think are printed at rare that might see some change. Aether Vial, Chalice of the Void. Those are kind of exciting prints to see and see what happens to those prices. That's exciting. But overall, I think that there's definitely some hits, and this is definitely a good showing. It will sell out. These boxes will be hard to find. I really hope that no one tries to just buy a bunch of boxes and hoard them. I think obviously there's going to be people that do that, but
there's some local stores in the Columbus area that are doing that actually.
Yeah,
we'll get to that later though.
Well, no, not even the store that we talked about pre-show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
but it's just that doesn't benefit your players. That doesn't grow your player base. And it's unfortunate that I know what's going to happen, obviously, but it's just sell the boxes. But I don't run a store. I don't know what kind of profit margins that they
need.
You're
not a greedy whore.
Well, no, not typically. I don't ask for my money up front, if that's what you're trying to say.
I perform my service. It's like a barber. You don't pay the barber beforehand. No. don't know.
The only problem I see is, like, as far as, like the, so they said, like, on average, what, you're going to get 3 mythics a box?
Yeah, something like that, probably.
Like, so I'll have to wait and see what the, like, packs, like what the, you'll hear on Twitter, you'll hear on Facebook, and all the people, like, were you opening, like, are people like, yeah, I got a Tarmogoyf with my box, or, yeah, I got 3 dragons.
Yeah, that, oh, yeah, that is something, okay.
For $300,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so the dragons being...
They say the Falling Star, why have you forsaken me?
Yeah, the dragons being at Mythic is... Why? Yeah, Wizards. I understand this is obviously draftable. You couldn't print them at rare? Like, is that just, is that bad? Like, I don't understand.
is that less than good?
I don't understand. Like, that's, yeah.
Is this set, this set was primarily for draft? I guess, now that we talk about this, maybe this set was primarily for draft. Like,
and, that could be, but it, that also goes kind of against them having such a low print run. Like, how many people are actually going to be able to draft this?
They have been marketing it as, like, one box, the greatest draft you'll ever have, if your draft is $300 per event.
Right, exactly. It's just like, okay, and I get to draft it once and never experience it again.
They definitely put work into making it draftable, and it was mentioned on Twitter a few times by some Wizard employees that they actually had Cube in mind as well.
Exactly,
so the
set
itself is like a portion, like you could take it as a portion of a cube, essentially.
Is that what you're doing with yours, Mike?
No, I'm going to hopefully open some sort of mega foil and sell it. But that's what happens with poor.
No, replace it with a foil island and then we'll sleeve it up.
Oh, of course. No.
Oh, yeah, there was a foil Tarmogoyf here, but it's a
basic lot of cards that. Oh, good. I'm sorry.
No, I'm done.
There's a lot of cards that, like, even I, like, when I took a break because Kamigawa was the worst set possibly ever. And, like, so there's definitely a bunch of stuff in there that I missed as well. And I'll be happy, like, to, you know, even through Pubing, like, looking at cards, I'm like, oh, I get to play this card for the first time, which is, you know, awesome. Yeah. And, you know, we'll definitely get to draft it a few times just based off, you know, like, I want a box and, you know, a few other people will have access to it. So that'll be fun. But it's not something that I think that, like, I don't know. I mean, unless it's, I guess, the greatest draft ever, like, 5 years down the road, I'm like, I have a box of Modern Masters. You got $1,000. Oh God, I have to draft this. It was the greatest experience of my life.
Yeah, because like no one cubes or anything like that. That's completely.
Oh, no, there's no
fun
draft.
No, there's no fun drafts. You just draft what's in standard, and that's it.
Is that not right? Have I been doing? Oh, son of a bitch! Like...
So obviously, you know, based on what we see, I think it's definitely going to be good. I think they're going to do this again with Modern, and it'll probably be. Another couple of years, and then, you know, we'll kind of see what happens with it then. But it's something that it's going to be a big hit. People are going to want this again and again. And especially, you know, if Legacy kind of goes the way of the Buffalo per se, you know, they're going to need to heavily support Modern as far as that goes. So, definitely something that, I think is a good move, and it's a solid set, you know. Does anyone else have any comments, concerns about Modern Masters?
I look forward to opening it, but I won't pay actual money for any of it.
Right, yeah. I look forward to opening your packs for you. And
that's what I'm looking forward to. Next Friday, baby.
Yeah.
As a new player in me says, or I guess relatively new at this stage, like, do I want to spend the money on cards that I'm probably actually never going to play with? Just from my perspective financially, like, money in Magic is not a hard thing, but is it worth the value to me particularly? I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe, though, maybe I might draft it next week and be like, oh my God, I missed out on the worst thing, on the best thing that ever happened, but I don't know.
I would say if you could buy a box, and you could have, like, if you could buy a box for $200 and you were a newer player and you said, man, I really want to play Modern, my guess is an average box, you know, based on getting at least one or two good mythics, a good amount of rares and uncommons that you wouldn't have had before, like Path to Exile and that sort of thing, you could probably trade the bulk of that box for a good portion of a playable Modern deck.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not, the set itself isn't like a collection in a box, though for the uncommons and commons it might be. Mm-hmm. So I would say that if you really want to get into Modern, you could buy a box for close to at value. It might be worth it, but I can see how as a new player, you'd be, you know, just looking at something that's like, I get 24 packs for how much?
Right.
No.
Mike, are you echoing a little bit?
I might be.
Yeah. If you have, like, headphones or something, you should throw them in.
All right.
Yeah, that's all I have for that. I was just curious on your guys' input, so I'm glad you said that, Mike. Because if later down the road I see it on eBay and it's like $250, you know.
Yeah, that won't happen.
Yeah, no, it's going to go up. So actually, I'll just get on eBay right now. Dang it. I got paid today and now it's gone.
Yeah, well, welcome to adulthood, you pussy.
I get paid once a month, dog.
Listen, well, then it's a big fat ass check. What do you want from me?
I want you to fix my phone because it's still doing that thing.
Well, anyway, and moving on. So let's go ahead and take a look at Star City Games Baltimore. We are probably mainly going to look at the standard portion since that's what we're all pretty adept at. If, you know, it strikes us that we want to talk about Legacy, we certainly can. Might be a little lost on me and Jordan's end. I do know that Mike has a little bit more experience with it. But, you know, let's kind of take a look here and look at the top eight. And I have the top eight up. So with first place, we have Junk Aristocrats, piloted by the good old Brad Nelson or Bart Narson. Back.
Yeah, no. Did you want to do some gloating, Morgan? I heard you...
Oh, yeah. I might have brought this up to Mike as a potential deck that I was going to play at FNM, and he said it looks fine, but it may not hold up against the aggro strategies that are kind of rampant and going on these days.
Were you not going from the list, the Adam Yurchik list from TCG
correct,
Player?
Correct, the list was different. But
very different.
Very different, yeah. But it is something that I think it's funny that I did bring up. As I said.
And that event on Saturday, in the top eight, what deck did I beat with one land in play? This is a true story. Junk Aristocrats in the top eight. Beat it with one land in play. It was actually not even close to a game.
Was it?
The whole match was bad.
Did you just laugh at him maniacally? Well, was it closer to Brad's list, or was it?
No, it was the Urchik list.
Urchik list. Yeah, I definitely like Brad's list a lot better.
I mean, he top eighted, I'll give him that. But the deck just, I don't know. This one looks better, but I still don't like it.
Yeah, I definitely like it, but it I don't think it's something I want to play it, and I want to think that I'm going to be good at it, but I don't think that I would be. It definitely has a lot of choices, just like the regular Aristocrats deck does. But I like the choices that he has made. I like the Skurs deck High Priest. As far as that goes, I think that this deck can, you know, being able to turn it on as soon as, you know, potentially turn three, and being able to just have more options with it. The Young Wolf kind of comes in as Doom Traveler 5 and 6, so that makes it a lot easier to turn on that High Priest. And the Urchik list didn't necessarily have that.
The Urchik list had the Maw of the Obsidot, which is an interesting finisher, but just hard to cast when you're trying to play against aggro.
Right, exactly. And it's like, you know, that's the top of your curve. Do you really want to, you know, something past Sorin that you want to be able to cast with your lands? Wouldn't you rather just kind of keep your resilient dudes around and make them get bigger with Gavinny Township, which I think is a better route to take. And I think that's just a really, really powerful card at this point in time. I've always thought that Gavinny Township, you know, out of the utility lands that came out in Innistrad is just the absolute nuts as far as that's concerned. And it makes me really want to play Lingering Souls and just max out on that. But I think the deck is interesting. I think it's something new. With the other top eight being, you know, the other top four all being aggro decks.
Black Red Zombies, baby.
Yeah, Black Red Zombies coming back. What's that?
That made my heart happy. Like, that's my deck, baby.
And yet a Sorin deck beat them.
I know. That's weird.
Is that a story we should share? Since we're going to make those jokes, yeah.
Yeah, not today, not right now. Maybe at the end if there's a little bit of time. Yeah, that's definitely a good story. Yeah.
The only thing I would say about the Aristocrats deck, and this is something that when we've been, you know, testing in the last few weeks, I've talked about with a, you know, player, a friend of ours who plays the other Aristocrats, and Brad Nelson said that the reason, like, this deck, that during Act 2 at least, did so well is because no one knows how to play against it. And I tend to agree with that. Like, I think, like, against this deck, like, how does this deck, I'm just asking, if your turn 2 against this deck is Rest in Peace, what does this deck do?
Not a whole lot.
I mean, Blood Artist is turned off, Doom Traveler is turned off, Young Wolf, Verrals, Voice of Resurgence, Skurs Deck High Priest, and Lingering Souls, and Tragic Slip all no longer work the way they're supposed to with a Rest in Peace in play.
That's true.
So I feel like if people, like, this deck is easy to adjust for. You have Abrupt Decay, which is fine, I guess, but I mean, I can even play Naya, which is what I've been on recently. I mean, you can board in Rest in Peace against them. They're not, you know, and just, what are they going to do? They're going to Abrupt Decay your Rest in Peace while they die to your Loxum Smiter, to your, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of ways to turn this deck off. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it won't continue to be good unless people just ignore those interactions.
Ignore the obvious.
Question for you.
And it's just, yeah.
Does Varals get turned off by a ground seal? Because it doesn't target, so...
No, well, no, because actually the scavenge creature, if I guess I could check on this, but the scavenge creature reads, the target is actually the creature in play, yes?
Correct. Because you exile...
Ground seal does not turn it off.
Okay, so ground seal, so this deck is just okay against Jund, it's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's actually probably really good against Jund.
Yeah, it's just like other aristocrats, if you don't have your board wipes early, then you're dead, so...
Well, the other aristocrats does still get to play. I mean, you lose Falconrath Aristocrat, which is big game.
Yeah, I agree. That's a lot of free wins.
And Blasphemous Act with Boros Reckoner is also a lot of free wins. So you definitely, I think you couldn't just pick up this deck and just start playing it perfectly, just because you lose so many free wins, you actually have to play the games to their end.
Correct.
So, I don't know. Brad Nelson gets to make his happy face with this deck and... then everyone will play this next week, and hopefully you can just hate it out.
Yeah, I hope that is. I mean, I'm still favoring Junk Reanimator. I have the Aristocrats deck sleeved up, and it watching it play, it seems like it has a lot of good interactions and a lot of fun things that you could do. But it's kind of, Voice of Resurgence is definitely a card, and I just, you bring up a good point with the rest of the piece. It just shuts off the whole deck, and only having access to two ways out of it seems a bit brutal. I would rather just be on the slime you out plan, which is what Reanimator really is doing. I really like slamming people out. It makes them sad.
It's the saddest way to lose.
I just love it.
That's how
it
just
makes you miserable.
I lost a standard event on Saturday like that. It wasn't sliming my lands out, but it slimed out my two ground seals, and I felt so safe against this. Rites deck, he's just like, oh, top deck, oh, look, acidic slime, top deck, oh, look, a restoration angel, bounce acidic slime, flashback on burial rates, it's like, oh, you good magic.
So, and then the other decks that we see obviously a lot of Naya aggro, and we have three of those making the top eight. Not surprising, definitely a solid deck. Again, Voice Resurgence is a card, it is good, people like it. And then we go on to some interesting ones, one of them being Black Red Zombies, piloted by Jeremy Sinnell. And some interesting choices. He does have a 1-up Blood Scrivener, which is good, finally seeing play. Everything else seems fine. You got a Falconrath Aristocrat as a 4-of, definitely makes sense. 2 of Liliana, which is pretty interesting as well.
Really good with Scrivener.
Yeah. And that is pretty interesting as well. Nice interactions. I saw this deck play a couple of games in the top eight. It seemed like I had a pretty poor matchup against the junk deck. So I'm not sure if it's something that would continue to gain popularity or anything like that. I think the Drops Messenger is obviously a very powerful card, and it's really sad that it has such a restriction on it. I just think that a lot of people aren't necessarily prepared to see that card back in play again. And it should find a home, but it's just that heavy black makes it really hard to play. But definitely it's a good aggressive strategy. But what do you guys think about the Black Red Zombies deck? Do you think that it'll be something that's going to continue going forward, or is it just going to fade out again?
The problem with zombies right now is let me count here real quick with the Naya aggro decks. And the Aristocrats decks. So just in the top eight, you have 1, 2, 3, 4 decks playing 4 Voice Resurgence, and sees the Reanimator deck playing some too. Mm-hmm. So the more the Voice Resurgence that exists, the more Pillar of Flame exists, the worse zombies is by proxy. So,
right, exactly.
I don't know. It'll probably never put up the results it was putting, obviously, before Ravnica. You'll probably see decks like this, and I think Scrivener is really, really good.
Right.
If you're playing it, if you went with, the Liliana, like you make your threats hard to answer, and then you just keep playing Liliana and then Scrivener to try and give yourself gas, I think that's probably good. But as I said, the more Tragic Slips and the more Pillars you see because of Voices, the less successful Zombies have a chance to be.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Some fun magic finances. Drawless Messenger currently at $350 apiece. I paid $20 for mine at Black Red Zombies Peak.
Nice.
So I am looking at, what is that, a -$64 in my trade binder. Da-da-da.
Sweet.
Good job.
Yeah, that happens. Welcome to Standard.
Bro. Right, exactly. What's that?
You could go back and get your value.
Yeah,
clearly. Just make that. Just start playing Black Red Zombies again. Make it the deck to beat, and then you'll be fine. No worries.
Yeah, wouldn't that be the deal?
Not like that card's going to rotate out anytime soon, right?
Shh,
oh, wait.
Shut your whore mouth.
Mike.
Talk about bug control.
What?
Talk about bug control.
All right, we'll find. Okay, I was going to talk about Nia Aggro because we do have a Nia Aggro player here, and I was going to ask how you felt playing it. You know, I know you're on more of the idle list than the list that was showing up in the top eight.
We can talk that first. The IQ this weekend, took second, playing Nia, big Nia, Adels Nia with four Thunder Wildkites, and my opponent was playing this exact Nia Aggro list. The one that's doing well at Star City. I lost game three to a Boros Reckoner carrying two Volcanic Drinks, so that was awkward. But I don't know. I tested that list a bunch because I was torn between the two decks, and I'm not a fan of the mana base. Just it's terrifying to play two basic forests and to play Boros Reckoners.
Yeah.
Because no matter how often you think you shouldn't, I always seem to be the one who opens the hand with two forests and two reckoners and then just tears everywhere. Mm. But the deck definitely has a lot of power, and Advent of the Worm is just big game. Being a flash creature, essentially, and just, you know, mopping up. Like, there's not a lot of creatures that mop up better than that. So it's definitely good, but there's so many of them, it'll be interesting to see how inbred they get when they try to beat each other the next few weeks.
Inbred is the word you use.
Magic Baby Player. You have the metagame, and if the metagame is X amount of one deck, then that deck has to try and beat itself because that's its most common matchup. So then the decks make weird choices and have weird cards in them that are specifically good only against that matchup.
No, yeah, I understand. I understand how metagame works. Bite me, you jack. I just googled inbred. Rooted and ingrained with one's nature as if implanted by heredity. It's just like, what? I just tried to put that in your sentence. I'm like, I guess.
And this has been your educational moment brought to you by At Your End Step.
Name branding. Good call.
You're welcome. That's what I do. What else am I going to do with this voice?
Make sweet love to me? I don't know. What?
Only if you're lucky.
Did you say you're out, Mike? Oh, man.
You guys, the sounds are about to get weird here.
This is the guy who wouldn't have sex with Brian Kibler.
Yeah. Yeah, what does he know?
Hey, I go by the beat of my own drum.
Fair enough. Can't blame you for that. So, Niagara, I do have to say that after looking at the list, I would prefer Idol's list, mainly because it's Brazilian and most people know what hot is. So, I would say that this list just doesn't seem to have enough oomph. You know, having those Thunder Mauls and Idols lists, those are just game enders. Thunder Maul Hellkite's a great card right now.
I will have you know, top four of that event, the second game against the Blue Eye Red opponent, I ended up drawing in succession three Thunder Maul Hellkites. And raced and assembled the legions with them. Card's good.
Apparently a big 5/5 hasty dragon that kills things in the air or taps them. Seems fine. That card might have a late break in price before it rotates out here in the fall. I want them to reprint it so bad. I think that card kind of got started late and could have been a lot better a lot sooner, but
I agree.
I don't even know if it can be. If we look in the name and number crunch, that's on, you know, MTG Salvation, if that can even fit in yet, so.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. So moving on to the fun list that showed up in fifth place, that would be Bug Control. This is a Planeswalker deck. This is what this is. This is Bug Super Friends, basically. We have one Garruk Relentless main, one side. We have two Garruk Primal Hunter, two Jace Architect of Thought, two Liliana of the Veil. Two Tamio the Moon Sage, and then we have two Jace Memory Adepts in the sideboard as well. So that is a lot of Planeswalkers.
You know what kills me about this deck?
What?
So there's three copies of Mutilate and eight Swamps.
Yeah, that seems a bit odd.
He's trying to kill... So this deck is meant to be, like, playing this against, I don't know, go back to the Aristocrats. You pretty much only need it for one or two. And I think that's the whole purpose behind the Mutilates, which just seems hilarious to me. You can play one Swamp, Farseek into the next one, and then never care about hitting another Swamp.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess that is probably true. And probably what he was going for, he's probably saying, like, well, I have Farseek, I could definitely grab Swamps and favor heavily towards them. And then, you know, these Mutilates don't seem so bad. So that's definitely an interesting way to go. The deck seem at the very least, it seems interesting. Seeing some more physique action in there as a 3-of, which is a pretty good removal spell. Some Abrupt Decay. And Aetherling. I mean, I'm proud to see that card going places. Needs to be played more.
It's so good.
Card's so good.
Just insane. I don't understand why people are like, well, I have a 6-mana creature that I can play on turn 7, and then pretty much you just can't deal with it. Like,
yeah, no, you can die to it. Like,
right, that's all you can do to it. Don't let me untap with this, or no, I just won the game.
On Reed Duke's thing last night, he was saying, somebody asked him, how do you deal with Aetherling? He goes, well, you win before they play it.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do. That's the only answer that Jund or most any deck has. Like,
or play your own.
Or play your own, or play Pithing Needle.
Cavern Shapeshifter. There we go.
So this deck, though, is interesting. So, like, if you play Pithing Needle against this deck, what do you actually name? Do you name Aetherling with 9 Planeswalkers in the main?
Yeah, no joke. You lose either through their Planeswalkers or, you know, Aetherling.
I mean, sure, it's all not Jace Architect a thought. Not Jace Architect a thought.
I mean, card's fine. Card's not bad.
There's a million Lingering Souls running around. The card's fine.
Yeah, card's not bad. I mean, Sorin might make it look bad, but that's about it. I definitely think that with this deck, it certainly needs some tweaking, but I mean, you can't really play Esper in this metagame. It's just not good anymore. You play blue, white, red, which is, I think that's probably the control deck to go to, but if you wanted something different and something you could put some time and effort into it and tweaking it and making sure your numbers are right, then this might be the deck for you. But it's interesting. Progenitor Mimic. I think that's fun.
It's definitely interesting.
Oh yeah,
it's a cool finisher against some of the removal light decks. But I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure what it's really really good against. But it definitely is fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you were probably wanting to do anything with standard, I would want to be Progenitor Mimicking Slimes. But that's just me.
You have an addiction with these slimes. You gotta
listen.
Talk.
There's nothing that feels better than just being like, your land.
Morgan, the whole reason we have this podcast is because we wanted to talk to you about your slime addiction.
Yeah, Jordan and I, we've tried other ways, but this is...
you don't even know what it's like, alright? I had to grow up on the streets, alright? And sometimes
kids didn't get no slimes.
We didn't get no slimes growing up. This is all we have. This is all I have right now. Go take it away.
I can destroy enchantments, like, for 5 mana? Oh, it feels so good. Better than heroin.
What are you gonna do when Restoration Angel's gone, Morgan? You're just gonna lay down in a little fetal position there and cry.
Next thing you know, you're playing 4 of a Progenitor Mimic, and it's horrible. It's a vicious cycle, I tell you.
Just get there. Well, let's see. It doesn't look like Acidic Slime's coming back, so gonna have to find a new home. Based on the
luckily,
name of
the match. There's this Modern Masters set. You could play Acidic Slime in Modern.
Oh, man. I don't think that's a
Michael,
five-mana
don't
card.
Encourage him.
That's a 5-mana card. I don't think that that it's going to make the cut there.
Oh, okay.
Unless it's Pod, maybe. But even then, no. moving on past Bug Control, rounding out the archetypes, we have Jund as a 1-of and Reanimator as a 1-of. Rounding out the top 8, who got 7th and 8th, respectively. Obviously, those decks are still good. I know that they've been talked to death on other podcasts. Some interesting choices for the Jund deck. Does have Thundermaw Hellkites on the side, which is good, but everything else seems pretty standard issue. And Slaughter Games as well, making a comeback, which probably is correct. Getting Slaughter Games feels miserable sometimes.
As long as I play them correctly.
Yeah, you got to play it correctly. It's definitely a card that, that is a lot harder to play than most people think. And then and the...
Guys, I had a Jund opponent this weekend, Slaughter Games Voice Resurgence. I don't know how many instants Jund normally plays, but I was a little confused.
That's wrong. That seems wrong.
That seems terrible, actually.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you don't take that card. I mean, it's still good against Jund, but I don't think that's the card you want to take.
On turn four, though? I don't know. That's just, he played it, I was like, oh, don't say Hellkite. And he said, Voice Resurgence. I'm like, oh.
Okay. Yeah, Hellkite. Yeah, I would take that card 100% of the time.
Yeah, so you have a two for two that I could just putrefy up my turn.
Yeah. Like, or just, you know, Bonfire.
Yeah, or just, you know, hey, hit me for two. I could care less. Like,
I could honestly care
less. I'll block with my Thrytusk. Yeah.
The reanimator list looks very, very stock. This looks like a deck from 2 weeks ago. Or even like post Dragon's Maze with some of the cards they have in here with Rocks, Faithmender, and Centaur Healer. Those are probably making a comeback, obviously, due to the aggro decks.
Right.
I honestly have a different opinion. I am more of the Chris Van Meter school of junk, where he's going with Garrick main, Voice main, Sin Collectors, all the Sin Collectors side. Sense control is not really where the metagame is at, and just kind of working with that. That's what I would prefer. So I would think that is probably going to be the more popular choice. Gives you the edge against Idle Naya a little bit, just to deal with early creatures with Garrick in the main. And
you
then
early creatures.
You know, I was hoping that you wouldn't catch that, but yeah.
When I play my creatures with my magic spells, they go on the board, and my opponent goes, "Oh no, there's an acidic swarm."
Hey!
It's swipe time.
Watch out for Restoration Angel.
Listen, I can leave. If this
my
is
name awesome. Is Morgan McCall, and I'm a planeswalker from the mighty Shard of Junk.
That's all right. We're one episode in, and we're alienating an entire group of people. So this is fine.
Yeah, no big deal. This clearly will not lead to feel bad.
MTG cast. Is this PG-13? IDK, bro.
If you speak like that, we mean no harm.
We mean no harm.
Yeah.
Translate.
All right.
We might have to edit
that over there, Jordan.
What's that?
Fires of hell. Come on.
Coming for you. No big deal. Anyway, that's the open, that's top eight. It seems that, you know, all the Naya from the GP in Guadalajara really brought out the people are really like, hey, we could play Naya again. Let's do that. And they just decided to do that. I think that the Naya aggro deck is definitely something that is going to stick around. I think that Idle Naya is probably just going to be a little bit better because the mana base is better and you have better creatures in the end game. And we'll kind of move on to that and move into the local events. So the first we're going to talk about is in the PA area, Pennsylvania. It's a PTQ that is in Mifflin, which is just outside of Pittsburgh. Jesus. Anyway, so obviously I believe Mike and Jordan are going. I cannot go. I have to work, so I will not be able to make the 3.5-hour drive. But what are you guys planning on playing?
I'm going to play the Edel Naya, so a little bit bigger. I really enjoyed playing last weekend. He had a great write-up after his, you know, number two at the GP the week before. Mm-hmm. And it's, the deck is just solid. Some of the numbers are a little weird, and I did play the version right now, or the version he was running at, two experiment ones, and he said he was iffy on them, and I actually never cast them and boarded them out every single time. Like, it never felt like that's what you actually wanted to be doing. So I'm going to toy around with some of the slots. I think more pillars are going to be important, because Pillar Flame seems like it's pretty good right now. But I don't know. I you guys all know I'm a big whore for Celeste and the Charmer. That deck gets to play that and the Okay, so I don't know what else I possibly could play at this point.
That's true. That seems like a fine choice. And I like the idea of the evolving guys, the experiment ones. Yeah, I wouldn't say that they're probably, just as a two of, it just seems kind of awkward.
I see what he's trying to do. Like, so like the numbers wise, it's like there's also only three Smiters and three Restoration Angels. So I think definitely I'm going to go to the fourth Smiter just because it's so good against that Naya aggro deck. Like, it just brick walls lots of guys. And then as far as the other one, like, I may either add the Last Angel and just go up to a bunch of creatures to make Dahmer Raid better.
Mm-hmm.
Or I might try out some Pillars. Mm-hmm. But definitely those are a little weird.
Yeah, I agree. So, Jordan, what are you going to be on?
I'm going to be playing Jund just because why not, I guess. The matchups for the deck are pretty average all around. Just draw good, bro, and that seems to be something I'm good at. So, you know, the luckiest Magic player in existence. I've been doing a little bit of work with my sideboard. I'm still pretty not sure on where I want to go with that. Obviously, I think a lot of kill your dudes is fine. Appetite or devour flushes are going to be insane. I have my deck here. What do I have in the sideboard right now? A card I've been thinking about. And I want to run this by you guys. Bant Hexproof, I don't know how much of a reality you guys expect that to be. But I was thinking, is Glaring Spotlight horrible?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it?
You play Bonfire anyways. Like, why? You're going to play your Glaring Spotlight so that you can putrefy things and hope you draw those in succession?
Because I have to have
If you're going to play Devour Flesh seems fine.
Yeah, I think that's right spot on. If you are worried about people,
not the spotlight.
Mike Kenny, get the hell out of my podcast.
I think that Devour Flesh is probably where you want to be if you're that concerned. I mean, do you play two more Lilies on the side?
I have one in the main and two in the side, yeah.
Yeah, so you play two sides. So those are, like, one of the extremely awesome answers. If you really are that concerned about it, then another Devour Flesh would probably be good. But I wouldn't... Like, if you're really afraid that people are going to try to spike the PTQ with Ban Hexproof, I just don't think that that's where people are going to be. If anything, they're going to be all in on these Naya aggro decks and that you're going to want Pillars in your sideboard.
That's probably where I was at. Like, somebody suggested Glaring Spotlight to me, and...
Did you just laugh at them in their face?
Well, I said, like, I tried it out at a local store event on Saturday night, and I never got to play the matchup, so I never used them. Which bad, too, because if I never play in the matchup, I want my sideboard to be versatile and, like...
Right.
Oh, these Glaring Spotlights are horrible against anything that's not this deck, so...
Exactly.
It's a very small
part of the metagame anyways, like...
Yeah.
And that matchup already, like, with your sac effects, anything, like... Like, personally, like, for mine, obviously I don't have access to sac outlets, but I play Ray of Revelation and Oblivion Rings on the board. And honestly, like, all my creatures are better than theirs. So, or same thing for Jund, like, all your cards are, you know, with the exception of maybe Geist's Entrap, are better than theirs. They're just trying to win off their synergistic draws. So on an average draw, you got to hope that you can still beat them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, if they go off, I played it at FNM, and the deck just stomped me. Like, it went off turn three, and there's nothing you can do about that. It just left a very sour taste in my mouth with, if this happens at a PTQ, I just go home. There's no get $10 in the store credit. Sorry about your X1. It's like,
that's Magic, though, man.
No, your article actually on LegitMTG helped me with that. Yeah, a little plug. Mike Keckney on the old Legit. I was just like, Magic sucks sometimes, and that's why we love it. And play this game, kids. You can lose a dice roll. But, so that's what I was leaving up. Jund, I have the most practice with it. Testing the past couple weeks, I feel like made me a lot better of a player with it. And watching Reed Duke just smash face, I realized I don't need to keep lands. I can just be like, yo, two lander on the draw that are both tap lands. It's fine. We'll get there. And we get there, so.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a realization or if that's just... I wouldn't be that aggressive with bad hands,
right? Yeah,
I don't know.
You got to be careful. I understand what Reed Duke did and like what happened, and you know he obviously is definitely someone that has played a lot of that deck and knows what to keep. So I would trust his judgment. But always take it with a grain of salt. I mean, obviously he's keeping hands with those type of lands set up that have action. And, you know, that's what you always want to try to keep is action with Jund, which is what I found out. I just didn't have anything, by, you know, against an unknown opponent. If I didn't have anything till like turn four, then I felt kind of bad, but it just depends, especially with the aggro deck, like with all those running around. If you don't have some kind of like interaction point within your first three turns, like it's probably, I you know, you're taking a risk there.
Yeah, no, the deck feels like it has a lot of situations where, you know, like the phrase I like is can't mull, can't win. I feel like I run into a lot of that with Jund. I'm just like, well, I hope I draw spells, or, oh, I hope I draw some lands to make these cards good. Like I said, I like the deck a lot. Like, I like that it has an even matchup against most decks in the format. I haven't tested Naya aggro. I'm looking forward to doing that. I need to by Saturday. Hell.
But, yeah.
Morgan, what are you taking to the PTQ, or I'm sorry, the GPT on Saturday?
Yeah, so I'm going to a GPT at one of our local card shops, because the prize payout is in Modern Masters, and why not? It's not 3.5 hours away. I was lazy and I didn't want to work yesterday, so I just, you know, decided to make up some time on that day. I think I'm just going to stick with Junk Reanimator. I have been playing that for the past couple of weeks and it's felt real powerful. The choices that it has now are actually really awesome. You know, I get to play with cards that I like to play with, like Voice of Resurgence and, Sim Collector, you know, my homeboy, Acidic Slime, you know. So I get to play with those. I really like the synergy that it has. I never feel weak playing it. I always feel that I can get out. It's just that my deck has to work with me and I have to draw, which helps, you know, it's a little bit better than Jund as far as that's concerned, because I always feel like I have more draw power with it, with the mulches and the grizzly salvages. And I always know that I have outs. There's nothing that I feel that ever completely gets me. But it just feels nice and there's no reason to change it up if something feels good.
So what's Mike? What's your goal for Pittsburgh? Q, or are you going to be happy with anything else?
Yeah, honestly, you know, this is like since I've been back, like playing, I'm trying to think, it's probably like my 6th or 7th PTQ since coming back to the game, and the last one that we played in, I top 8ed. So I feel like at this point, like if I don't top 8, then I'll be disappointed. And not that I feel like I'm amazing or anything, but like for myself, that's, I want to make sure that I'm getting better. Otherwise, why am I spending the money?
Sure, right.
Definitely, I feel like it's possible. You know what I mean? It really will. You know, it's always metagame dependent, but I think, you know, more so than any other PTQ season, you know, we've done some testing. I'm happy with the deck that I'm at now. I am. You know, I feel like it's possible to win on Saturday, which is better than when I first came back, where it's like, oh, I'm glad I'm paying money for this so I can O2 drop.
Right. Yeah. I guess just for the sake of encouragement, like there is, like we just talked about, Magic is such a variance game that like. I think a good player can, on average, top 16, top 25 of PTQ, but top 8, I think the cards have to follow your way, too, you know?
Oh, definitely.
So I guess I like your goal. I just don't want you to get upset, like, if you play super well and don't top 8.
No. I mean, I am set for myself, but I'm saying, like definitely, like, there's no way I'm not going to hold myself to wanting to get anything less.
Sure, yeah. I totally hear that. Like, hold yourself to the high standard and shoot for it, absolutely. My goal is to just not screw the dog, pretty much, because the whole, this is my second PTQ, and the last PTQ I went to, I O2 droppered. It wasn't very fun, and I just played bad, and I knew I played bad. So the goal here is to just play well, top something, and get some points for the GP Miami, so I can get a bye, because I'm pretty close to a bye for that.
Well, that's awesome. All right, so the last thing that we really wanted to kind of bring up, and this is very local to us, but it can be applied to, I'm sure, many of your local stores, is events that are containing Modern Masters. We have one that's sort of a year anniversary for a particular store, and they are kind of doing an all-day event that has several pods with Standard and eventually leads to Modern Masters. And this event is, you know, obviously relatively priced, but, you know, kind of what I want to lead this discussion into is, you know, what my, compatriots here would really think the price of drafting Modern Masters would be. If, let's say at an FNM level, if you will, what do you think would be the value in it? And how much would you pay?
Well, I'm gonna plug, Ryan here a little bit. One of the local stores we play at down in Columbus is called Comic Town. And tell you, Ryan goes out of his way, the owner there, to price things appropriately and essentially at MSRP. And he's talking 25 to 30 for draft, and that's with price support.
Yep.
And I feel like that's, I mean, if you started to go 30 and then you put in, you know, I don't know, the price support would be a little bit, you know, iffy, but like, I'm sure most players would play at cost with little to no price support just to get to touch the set. And most places around here aren't doing that. I know the store you guys are talking about has a bunch of theater events to get into the actual event, and it's the most ridiculous setup that I've ever heard of. But
Yeah, that's kind of the issue. But yeah, I'll let Jordan talk.
Yeah, no, same way with Ryan. I wanted to plug actually Capital Games and Gahanna for doing MSRP plus $5 for prize support. $30 to draft at Capital with Dan over there. He's just like, this set's fantastic, and people should get to play it. I don't like the theater, to be honest, that one of our other stores is doing. I would just want to play the set. Like, take my money and let me play the set. I would even pay above MSRP. If I'm a normal player who cares about this set, which I don't think I am just yet, I don't think I'm sold on Modern Masters, but if I wanted to play it, I could see people just being like, dude, charge me what you want to charge me, just let me play with the set. I don't need to win a pod to win a pod to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I would say that you know, the top end with price support, I would say that we'd probably want to be looking at $40. You know, that's how much I want to pay to play Swiss rounds with the cards that I open, and then, you know, hopefully make top eight and get paid in Modern Masters again. I think that would be a great price point and something that I would be willing to do 100% of the time.
Oh, wait, is Comic Town paying out in Modern Masters?
No, I'm just saying like that. If that was the payout,
I know, most of the places around here still don't know how much they're actually going to get. So
exactly,
I'm sure we'll find out what's going on soon. But
yeah, that sounded insane. I was like, oh my goodness, like I'm playing Modern Masters now just for the money.
They paid out Modern Masters last weekend.
Oh yeah, how many packs did you get for that? Half a box or what?
It's a box. Yeah, it was a box.
Oh, is that how we know we're drafting next
That's
round?
How we're drafting, yes.
Yeah, and see, and that's, and that's just why I'm doing the GPT, because I know it's guaranteed, you know, top 8 get Modern Masters packs or even box. So, I mean, that's what I want. I want to get that because that's where value lies for me as far as that goes. But so kind of closing out the podcast, I mean, this is obviously our first one. Might be a little bit rough and do certainly apologize for that. We aim to get better and have better opinions. And, you know, hopefully make you laugh at some point in time.
Have better opinions.
No.
Like,
I'm already at the peak of my condition. I'm not getting better, just so you know.
You're not, just straight out, like, laying it all out.
I'm not even trying, honestly, to get better. So disregard that for me. But those two, I'm sure, are trying.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Totally, we should plug. We have an email account and a Twitter account, and they'll be in the show notes. But I got all busy today and stuff. So, comments, like, tell us why we suck, like Morgan said. Tell us why Mike is terrible. Mike needs it.
Specifically.
Yeah, specifically Mike. Mike, you are terrible because your opinions are bad and you should feel bad.
Sweet.
Morgan, Acidic Slime is a terrible card.
Lies.
Jordan, you're a cute guy. That's what you should say.
Yeah, clearly.
Email us at yourinstep at gmail.com and tweet at us at yourinstep. Follow us. We will never tweet from that account unless we're never... Probably I'll forget about it in a week.
Awesome.
You should follow it.
You should probably let me have the credentials for that so we don't forget about it.
It's actually, yeah, okay. I'll tell you the passwords. I was going to say it.
Yeah, don't do it over the phone. That would be bad. Don't let him know that we're amateurs. What are you doing?
We didn't decide to do this today when I was at work.
All right. So, obviously, we all have personal Twitters. Twitter handles. Mine is Morg War Marshal, MorgMarshall. Morg War Marshal. And then if Mike and Jordan want to give out theirs, they certainly can. I'll let them take over on that.
I'm at Big Tears. That's big_tears. There's a lovely story behind that, but we'll get into that some other time.
Yeah.
And I'm at I'm German, which is IMJORMAN. It's like, I'm Jordan, but change the D to an N.
All right. And again, this
somebody is... already taken that, and you were sad.
And these all be in the show notes, of course. So I am going to kind of close out the show here, but I do thank you all for listening to the first and hopefully not final episode of At Your End Step. My name is Morgan.
I'm Mike.
Oh, yeah. And I'm Jordan. You were closing out the show, bro.
Yeah, I'm doing our final. You're terrible at this.
We didn't practice, bros.
All right, hands in, team.
Hands in. And you may move to your turn.
Gay.